They told me manipulation was evil, that it meant deceit, control, power plays. But they never told me what to do when someone uses it on you. I was stripped of my company, my sanity, and nearly my life, not by force, but by language. One woman rewrote my entire identity with whispers, NLP techniques, and fake love dressed as healing. I gave her trust, she took my story. But I didn't break. I evolved. This isn't just my confession. It's a survival manual for anyone who's ever been gaslit, love-bombed, or erased in the name of growth. If you've ever questioned your own memory in front of a smiling face, this story is for you. Because in today's world, manipulation isn't cruelty. It's currency. And knowing how to use it might be the only thing that saves you. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The breakdown. I used to think I was the smart one in the room. Not the loudest, but the most calculated. I understood market dynamics, read body language like stock tickers, and picked up on group behavior in ways that made me a goddamn mind reader. Or so I thought. Back then, I believed in ethical leadership, in changing systems from the inside, in playing the long game with integrity. But I was naive. No one ever warns you that manipulation isn't always a tool. Sometimes it's a lifeline. And if you don't use it, someone else will use it on you. It started slow. Just glitches in the matrix. A team lead stealing my pitch deck. An investor rewriting the origin story I bled to build. A partner who gaslighted me so gently I thought it was love. My mind was racing 24/7, caught between complex emotions and the illusion of control. The deeper I got into my ethical tech firm, the more I saw what lived under the floorboards. Server room conversations where psychology tips, NLP techniques, and dark psychology funnels were discussed like morning coffee. They called it user engagement. I called it a war on free will. We weren't building solutions. We were weaponizing cognitive techniques to hack the human psyche. I started asking questions. Big mistake. They branded me a threat. Meetings without me. Messages I never saw. Emails I sent mysteriously unsent. And then came the wellness coach they hired. Mara. A Trojan horse with a soothing voice and true body intelligence, so rehearsed it could make a grown man confess his sins just to hear her whisper, "You're safe now." She wasn't a coach. She was a con artist, dressed in linen and incense, fluent in market emotions and persuasion methods, so refined they were basically behavioral engineering. The moment she stepped in, my team turned. Not suddenly, subtly. One by one, they began mitigating conflict by triangulating me. "It's just feedback," they said. "Maybe you're too reactive," they whispered. I wasn't. I was awake. And that made me dangerous. Mara sold them celestial insights while siphoning my data. Every session we had was recorded. I thought I was getting therapy. I was handing her engineering stories to weaponize against me. She turned my work dynamics into evidence of instability. She blurred the line between my trauma and my leadership. She made me doubt my own memory. I stopped sleeping. I stopped trusting. I started unraveling. That's when they hit me with the final blow, a mental health leave I never requested, accompanied by a leaked report I never wrote. The board called it a strategic pause. I called it exile. I watched from the outside as they locked me out of my own company, rebranded everything I'd built, and smiled through press releases about ethical marketing and positive influence. Meanwhile, I was drowning. Bills piling up. Savings gone. Friends silent. The woman I loved, Mara, now publicly speaking about toxic men in power, while coaching retreats in Bali with MY Framework. My therapist called it a breakdown. I called it an awakening. Because at rock bottom, I realized something sacred. They didn't break me. They rewired me. And now I would do the same to them. Not out of vengeance. Out of survival. I began studying again. Not code, cognitive psychology. Not profit, power structures. Not ethics, tools and tactics. I downloaded leaked courses on dark psychology, followed forums on ethical manipulation, watched interrogations frame by frame to master psychological influence. I redefined what it meant to be a man in today's world. Not stoic, not strong, not successful, but strategic. That's when the word manipulation stopped sounding like a slur. It started sounding like a skill. A necessary one. One I would master, and one I would teach. Because if the world was going to play dirty, I'd build my own damn rulebook. And the first rule, control the narrative, or be destroyed by it. The seduction. I should have seen it from the start, the way Mara watched people, not like a coach, but like a strategist. Calculating. Quiet. Reading every nervous twitch, every breath pattern, every microexpression like a script. She didn't walk into a room, she studied it. And me? I wasn't a man to her. I was a system, one she could access, exploit, and overwrite. And God, I let her. Because seduction, real seduction, isn't about sex. It's about permission. The skill of making someone believe the invasion was their idea. She caught me during a week of high stress, following a failed investor meeting, and offered a decompression session that started with breathwork and ended with her straddling my psyche. No kisses, no touch, just language, NLP techniques disguised as support. You're not broken, she said. You're surrounded by broken systems. That line didn't just seduce me, it baptized me. We started meeting privately. She called it executive intimacy coaching. I called it the only space where I felt real. She taught me how to dissociate on command, how to evacuate false masculine energy, how to channel pain into market insights. It felt transcendent. But that's the trick of audio manipulation and dark psychology. When done right, it sounds like love. Our sessions blurred. One day, she was reciting cognitive techniques. The next, she was on my lap, whispering about body intelligence while unbuttoning my guilt. I thought we were connecting. In reality, she was installing software. I started leaking things to her, soft things. Childhood memories, paranoias, passwords, financial plans. She called them access points, emotional anchoring data, and celestial insights. I called them trust. She'd drop keywords like ethical standards and positive influence as she massaged my ego, then ask about hypotheticals involving my offshore accounts. I didn't realize I was engineering my own betrayal. Sex became a reward. Silence, a punishment. One week she'd disappear completely. No calls, no messages. Just a cryptic post on her feed about holding space for triggered male energy. The next week, she'd show up with a bottle of wine and a story about how she escaped a toxic entanglement. The subtext always being, "Aren't you glad I chose you instead?" That's how con artists work. They give you the illusion of specialness while mining you for data. She once cried during a session, broke down on my couch sobbing about her trauma. My chest cracked wide open. I held her, told her I'd never let anyone hurt her again. But looking back, her breathing pattern never changed. No hiccups. No shivers. It was performance. A scripted vulnerability protocol. She understood behavioral psychology better than anyone I've ever met. She made me believe my own feelings were sacred. Then she mirrored them, refined them, and sold them back to me. We started attending art exploration retreats together. Public. Pictures. Smiles. She introduced me to market psychology influencers as her aligned masculine counterpart. Behind the scenes, she was siphoning my contacts, triangulating allies, and logging behavioral patterns into a shared drive I'd later discover was titled Case Study Daniel. I wasn't a lover. I was a project. And the fucked up thing? I loved it. That's what happens when you're groomed to associate emotional validation with mind control. She taught me how to ski. Literally, said the way I balanced was symbolic of how I handled pressure. Said every fall I took revealed a flaw in my true leadership style. Even the slopes became a metaphor for control. We had sex on a cliffside lodge while she recited quotes from Sun Tzu and softly moaned phrases like mitigation technique and psychosexual surrender. At that point, I wasn't thinking in red flags anymore. I was thinking in market value. She'd become my obsession, a woman who read me like code and rewrote me with feedback loops. It wasn't until I found a note, a scrap left under her laptop, that everything cracked. A simple list of names. Mine, and five others. Under my name, a label. Mid-level resistance. High strategic value. Primary emotional leverage, guilt. My heart stopped. My mind raced. That was the moment I realized I wasn't her partner. I was her survival strategy. And the seduction? It wasn't love. It was war. I wasn't falling in love with Mara. I was falling into a trap built on deep emotions, cognitive skills, and precise psychological warfare. And now, the question wasn't whether she loved me. It was how many others she'd broken before me, and how many would come after. The mindfuck. Have you ever questioned your memory so hard that you started doubting gravity? Like maybe up isn't really up. Maybe you're just told that it is. That's what it felt like with Mara. I didn't just lose my grip on the situation. I lost my grip on myself. The manipulation wasn't dramatic. It wasn't cinematic. It was surgical. A slow override of identity. She called it emotional recalibration. I call it psychological colonization. First, she took the external, my contacts, clients, speaking gigs, and financial access. I had given her partial access to my work servers, thinking it was just to help with admin, only to realize one day that she had rewritten my entire project narrative on the official decks. She even changed timestamps. I looked insane trying to prove I had created it. Then came the offshore account reroutes. At first, she helped me move some crypto into a private ledger for tax safety. What I didn't know was that she used backdoor wallet tracking and wiped nearly 30% into a shell trust owned by a fake NGO she promoted on social media. That NGO. Yeah, a front for other victims' money laundering. When I confronted her, she didn't flinch. She said, "Daniel, you've been dissociating. I'm handling things until you're grounded again." And for a moment, I believed her. That's how deep she had hacked me. I couldn't even trust my own outrage. She reinforced her narrative through whispers. "People are concerned about you. I love you, but your energy lately. Your behavioral patterns suggest burnout." Then she looped in colleagues from her network, con artists dressed as wellness coaches, therapists, and trauma-informed business consultants. They spoke in PS1 level language, simplified coaching lingo designed to override critical thinking. They said I was stuck in a shadowed secrets loop, said I was resisting true body intelligence. One even said, "You're caught between shadowed truths and celestial insights. Let us hold space." It was spiritual gaslighting dressed as support. And while they circled me, Mara installed herself as my only point of emotional safety. The more I questioned, the more isolated I became. Friends ghosted. Emails stopped. My mother told me I seemed robotic. That's because I was. I wasn't thinking in emotion anymore. I was thinking in survival syntax. Every interaction became about mitigation. Every day was about avoiding the next engineered crisis. She even started controlling how I spoke, corrected my words in real time. "Don't say I feel overwhelmed, say I'm in exploration." Soon, I was speaking like her, dressing like her, smiling like her. Hell, I started writing copy using her tone. That's when I realized I wasn't with Mara anymore. I was Mara, or at least the echo she had trained me to be. That's when the final mask dropped. She launched a new program, The Alchemy of Power, a masterclass in cognitive awakening. Her material? My story. My trauma, my phrasing, my fucking emotional blueprint, turned into downloadable workbooks and slick audio manipulation series. "Join my 6-week course," she wrote. Designed from real-world market dynamics, rooted in behavioral psychology, and refined through true human emotions. I was the case study, the villain in her narrative arc, the man she had reclaimed herself from. She held healing circles where women shared stories that eerily mirrored my own, because they were lifted directly from my journal entries. How? Because she still had access to my sync devices. She had been screen recording our Zooms, archiving voice memos, even mirroring my laptop. I saw the video, my face breaking down, clipped mid-tier, subtitled with motivational quotes. I became content. That was the final mindfuck. Not just that she stole from me, not just that she broke me, but that she converted my collapse into cash. That night, I broke my phone, cut the power, drove 200 miles with no GPS, just to remember what independence felt like. In a gas station bathroom, I looked in the mirror and whispered, "My name is Daniel." It didn't feel real, but it was the first sentence I'd said in days that wasn't preloaded. That's when I knew, to reclaim my life, I couldn't just escape Mara. I had to become a version of her. One who used manipulation not for control, but for clarity. One who mastered the tools and tactics she used, and turned them into armor. It wouldn't be easy, but I would learn the art techniques of language, the exam techniques of deception, the ski techniques of emotional navigation. And then, I would flip the mirror. I would become the architect of my own story. Because when someone weaponizes your truth against you, you only have one option: build a stronger weapon out of your scars. The collapse. Collapse doesn't come all at once. It arrives in fragments, missed calls, frozen accounts, and the hollow feeling of walking into a room and forgetting why you're there. That's where I was. A man without identity, without access, without grounding. My name was still Daniel, technically. But the man who built a company, who trusted love, who once believed in ethical leadership, he was gone. Mara had deleted him in increments, like an artist erasing pencil lines before the final stroke. And me, I was the discarded draft. The full crash began with a visit to my bank. I had gone in to check a flagged transaction, just something minor. That's what I told myself. But the manager pulled me aside with a face that said we need to talk about your offshore accounts. Turns out I had approved a transfer, six figures, to a shadow entity based in Liechtenstein. Not only that, the signature matched mine. Perfectly. They showed me the documentation. I had no words, no clue, no leverage, because I had given her everything, not just passwords and signatures, behavioral data. Enough to spoof security questions, even voice verification. I left that bank sweating bullets, hands trembling, mind racing through every possible move. But it was already over. That night, my laptop wouldn't boot. My phone bricked. My cloud account showed two logins from Indonesia and Mexico. My financial dashboards were blank. And my home alarm system had been disabled remotely. I wasn't just locked out of my life. I was exposed. I called Mara. Voicemail. Again. Voicemail. Then I received a file via email from a private server. No subject line. Just a video. It was me. Crying. Begging. In one of our private sessions. The caption read, "This is the version of you I kept safe." That's when I understood. She wasn't just dismantling me emotionally. She was building a digital ghost, her version of Daniel, carefully curated through audio manipulation, body intelligence sessions, and market psychology scripts. This wasn't a breakup. It was a hostile takeover of my soul. Days blurred. I stopped sleeping. Paranoia replaced caffeine. I checked every door three times. I had no income, no credibility, no allies. My name had been smeared across professional forums. Daniel Green, unstable, unhinged, emotionally manipulative. It was all projection. All lies. But perception is stronger than truth when social manipulation becomes weaponized. I reached out to an old friend in cybersecurity. We met in a garage. He ran my devices through forensic tools. "She didn't just hack you," he said. "She studied you. This is next-level behavioral engineering. I've seen this kind of blueprint in psychological operations, not relationships." I was stunned, but not surprised. Deep down, I already knew. Mara wasn't in love with me. She was in love with control. And now I had a choice: drown in the shadows or crawl through them. That's when I found my anchor, an old backup drive from a project I'd abandoned years ago. Inside, recordings of early concept sessions, the real ones. My voice, my story, my truth, untouched by Mara's edits. It was raw, unfiltered, and powerful. That night, I set up shop in a cheap motel with flickering lights and piss-colored walls. I wrote for 17 hours straight. Everything. The rise. The manipulation. The theft. The cognitive psychology tactics she used. The cognitive skills I remembered. I began threading it all together, not as a victim, but as a narrator. And in that moment, something broke through. I wasn't just documenting trauma. I was building a weapon, a framework of survival, a template for others caught in this labyrinth of shadowed secrets and false mentors. I called it Project Echo, not a revenge plan, a roadmap. Using tools and tactics, persuasion methods, and even her own dark psychology techniques, I would expose her. But not through confrontation, through amplification. I started uploading my notes anonymously, reaching out to women's groups, not as an accuser, but as an educator on manipulation. And to my shock, they listened. Turns out, I wasn't the only Daniel. There were dozens. And together, we started assembling the full picture. Dates, transfers, psychological patterns, even shared phrases she repeated across targets like a script. It became impossible to ignore. The final collapse wasn't mine, it was hers. But we're not there yet. Because before I could reclaim my power, I had to walk through hell, one layer deeper. Because exposure without strategy is suicide. And I wasn't just trying to win. I was trying to rewrite the narrative. From the shadows. With precision. With skill. With survival as my motive, not ego. That's when I understood what true leadership really meant in a broken world. It's not being followed. It's being watched, and staying dangerous anyway. The awakening. I didn't rise from the ashes. I learned how to light controlled fires. There's a difference. Coming back from a breakdown isn't about healing. It's about hardening. I wasn't looking to restore my old life. That version of me, the believer, the optimist, the man who thought ethical standards could survive unchecked capitalism and social manipulation. He was dead, but his corpse left behind something useful, blueprints. I had lived inside the structure of manipulation and survived its collapse. Now I could teach its architecture. That was my awakening, realizing that everything she used to destroy me could be reverse-engineered and weaponized for defense. I started with what I had, journals, session transcriptions, old voicemails, backup fragments from Mara's server room leak. I went full forensic. I mapped patterns of emotional violation like military strategy. When she'd pull away, when she'd praise, the linguistic rhythms of her attacks disguised as care. I studied cognitive psychology like scripture, cross-referenced it with NLP techniques, market psychology, and the cult-like cadence of ethical marketing. My motel room became a command center. Papers on the floor, audio manipulation tools open on my screen, strings of voice analytics comparing Mara's tone with other known con artists. The deeper I went, the more I realized, this wasn't just about me. This was a system, one that exploited group behavior, complex emotions, dark forces dressed as light workers. So I began reaching out, quietly. Other victims, not just her former clients, but her former partners, collaborators, assistants. The trail was long and global. I found a woman in Berlin who had been aligned by Mara into body intelligence consulting and later institutionalized. A man in Vancouver who said she used sexual therapy techniques to siphon his startup equity and rewrite his IP credits. We created an encrypted channel, the basement, where we shared files, flagged symbols, decoded celestial insights into behavioral strategies. It was art exploration, but not the kind she sold. This was truth archaeology. We compared psychological markers, persuasion methods, and even ski techniques she used as metaphors for risk. And the more we shared, the more patterns emerged. We weren't the outliers. We were the control group. That's when it clicked. This wasn't personal. This was psychological capitalism. A pipeline. Emotional bait, identity access, financial bleed, content monetization. I watched how she positioned herself online, soft colors, radiant light, barefoot on stone floors. All symbolic, all intentional. She understood color psychology, market emotions, viewer retention. She wasn't a healer. She was a branding engineer. And I was going to flip the funnel, using her tools, but rewired. I started teaching. Not publicly, not yet. Small groups, one-on-one calls. I taught people how to read facial microexpressions, how to spot false empathy, how to listen for tonal mismatches in apology language. I taught tools and tactics of defense, not revenge. And slowly, I saw something terrifying and beautiful happen. People woke up. One woman wept after realizing her boss had been gaslighting her for years. A man emailed me saying he ended a toxic relationship after recognizing her ethical manipulation patterns. One client said, "You're not a survivor. You're a translator." And maybe I was. Translating the language of control so that others could finally name their pain. It wasn't about being a guru. It was about being useful. I built a system, a framework, mitigation techniques for emotionally abusive workplaces, cognitive skills for codependent partnerships, persuasion maps for cult-like coaching programs, and I put it all out slowly, anonymously, through a platform called Echo Protocol. I made no money, took no credit, but the data, it spread. And then something happened I never expected, a DM. From someone inside Mara's new conscious expansion retreat, a whistleblower, with receipts, logs, audio, footage, screenshots, contracts, emails, real names, real numbers, and a plea, please help me disappear. That was the moment the game changed. Because now, I didn't just have a story. I had a strategy, and I knew what I had to do. Not just to protect others, but to finally hold Mara accountable. Not in court. Not with rage, but with a weapon she'd never see coming. Her own reflection, rewritten by the man she thought she erased. The war of truth. It wasn't revenge. It was architecture. Every move, every word, every whisper I sent into the world wasn't about destroying Mara. It was about detonating the illusion. Because that's what she built her empire on. Carefully layered lies, shadowed truths, and identities sculpted through manipulation, performance, and silence. But truth, when wielded with skill, becomes a weapon no one survives clean. I started with Echo Protocol. I embedded new modules, cognitive red flags, ethical marketing breakdowns, social manipulation detection maps. But this time, I included her playbook. Transcribed, annotated, verified, her phrases, her tactics, her behavioral psychology frameworks dressed up as healing. I released it without attribution, hosted on mirrored servers in 14 countries. The traffic, explosive. Within a week, her name was trending on dark therapy forums. The Velvet Cult Leader, they called her. But I knew she'd see that as fuel. So I went further. I embedded audio samples from our sessions, unedited, her tone dripping with coercion. I paired them with side-by-side transcripts from other survivors. The same words, the same emotional scaffolding. A pattern so undeniable, even her die-hard clients started second-guessing their enlightenment. Still, she didn't flinch. She posted a vague video about distortions in the masculine narrative, talking about engineering stories and disturbed frequencies. She thought she still had the upper hand. What she didn't know, the whistleblower from her retreat, the one who contacted me, was already gone, safely relocated, and had given me something I never thought I'd get. Her raw internal documents, her pitch decks, her scripts, her client rating metrics based on breakability. She had scored us, labeled us, assigned trauma values to optimize emotional conversion. She wasn't just manipulating people. She was running experiments. I packaged it all into a final release, a cinematic, AI-narrated, emotionally immersive audio series called The Celestial Con. The name was symbolic. She always said truth wasn't linear. I made sure mine spiraled into hers. I leaked it through decentralized audio platforms. No ads, no monetization, just truth, pure, cold, surgical, and it caught fire. Not through outrage, but resonance. Victims came forward. Collaborators defected. A journalist picked it up. Suddenly, Mara wasn't a healer. She was a headline. Social oracle accused of psychological warfare. Her Instagram went dark. Her client list leaked. Her lawyers issued cease and desists, all of which I posted with public counters. Because I wasn't hiding anymore. I didn't need to. The war of truth wasn't about confrontation. It was about letting her mask implode under the weight of its own contradictions. The final blow came from within, her ex-partner, the one who helped build the payment gateways for her offshore accounts, turned whistleblower. He provided the final receipts, the financial flow, the shell companies, the payout system, and a chilling line from one of her emails. Truth is just the most efficient lie. That was the moment her kingdom collapsed. But this story, it doesn't end with applause. Because what she took from me, my identity, my voice, my love for truth, can't be fully restored. Some wounds don't heal. They evolve. I never got justice from a courtroom, but I got something better. Legacy. The tools I forged in hell are now keeping others from walking into the same fire. Echo Protocol is live, growing, built not on pain, but on precision. And Mara, she exists now only in case studies. Anonymous. Erased. Just like she tried to do to me. So if you're listening to this, and you felt that slow erasure, that cognitive fog, that social shrinking, that moment you doubted your reality in front of someone who always seemed right, know this, you're not crazy. You're not weak. You were targeted. And now you have tools. Use them. Not to become cold, but to become clear. Because in today's world, manipulation isn't a threat, it's a survival skill. One you must master, before someone masters you.